Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Mark Elliott. I'm number 16845 on behalf of Patrick McLaughlin, who's also present here today. From the beginning, this case has been about whether Mr. McLaughlin was traveling to the Saratoga Inn in Wyoming to work or not. Was he going up there to work, or was he going to attend a holiday party for fun and not do any work? And that's not just been the issue from my perspective. That's been the issue from Mr. Kotarek's perspective as well. And I'll read from his opening statement. This is a record at various pages from 163 to 165. Mr. McLaughlin is trying to frame it in that, out of all the people that attended this party, he was special. He was unique. He was the one that it wasn't just for fun. This wasn't for pleasure. This wasn't just to celebrate, to say thanks, that he was special and that this was a work trip for him. This is, and Mr. Kotarek continues, that is wrong. This was not a work trip for Mr. McLaughlin. Next page, the travel status case only applies if this is a work-related event. Mr. McLaughlin was not the one out of the 50 people who had special circumstances applied to him.
Didn't the ALJ and or the panel find that, okay, it was work-related in that there was travel status?
Absolutely.
Right. So I'm not sure we need to get worried about whether or not it was a work-related event. The question is, what's the effect of the statute on definitions of employment and employee, and whether or not there's an implicit, exception to the application of those definitions to your situation? I would think, counsel.
I don't disagree with that, Jeff. What I think, what this brings us to is the point that this is a case that either can be decided by application of the travel status doctrine, or it's a case that can be decided by application of the recreational activity statute, or it's a case where there's a conflict between the two, and this court has to decide a principle basis to draw a distinction and which way to go. My argument has been from the start and is still before this court. My main argument is that you don't have to analyze this case in any other way except as a travel status case. The travel status doctrine, as a majority rule in workers' compensation, was adopted by the Colorado Supreme Court at least as early as 1957 in the Alexander Film case. And in Alexander Film, we're talking about travel status in this broader sense that we were talking about in the briefs and we're talking about here, where an employee travels out of the state, or it doesn't have to be out of the state, it could be out of a city, but you travel out of the state to perform work on behalf of your employer. In those circumstances, there's a broad coverage. It's 24/7, unless, and that's the key, unless there's a substantial deviation. It's been called a frolic, a lark, a substantial deviation. We don't have that here, and what we have the ALJ doing, Judge, is deciding that voluntary participation in the street hockey game is the same thing as a frolic, a lark, a substantial deviation. And I submit to this court that as a matter of logic, that is clearly wrong.
Just to understand, you're saying that if this street hockey game had occurred in Denver, I think the employer is located in the Denver metropolitan area, right?
It is, Jeff.
Yes. So if that street hockey game had just been put together in Denver, then we wouldn't be here. It would be clear that he wouldn't qualify. You're saying because he was on travel status, that brings a whole new light into it, which we have to consider in applying these two definitions that are in the statute, saying that employment doesn't include voluntary recreational activity, even if sponsored or promoted by the employer.
I would agree with that, Judge, assuming that in the facts of that case that you're talking about, not this case, but in the facts of that case, they found voluntary participation.
I'm talking about the voluntary participation exception.
And that would be my example to give to the court. I think as young lawyers, I participated in the softball league that was sponsored by my employer. I played basketball in the HRO basketball team. I lived in my house. I traveled to those games from my house. I went home to my house. In no way, when I voluntarily chose to participate in those games, was I doing something that would be considered part of my employment. This is a totally different situation. This is a situation, again, where we're dealing with, and I think, well, my initial argument is, once you take the fork in the road that it's found, paragraph 7 of the ALJ's findings, that he's on trial status in the broader sense, or even if it's not the broader sense, it's at least prong 3 of the Madden case, that he's in a different situation than every other employee who was up there. And I would argue that that's all you need to analyze what happened. The other employees who were up there to attend the holiday party and have no work to do, you don't even have to decide their status based on the recreational activity statute, because they never gain travel status. They don't go to Wyoming to perform any work for the employer. So they're never on travel status. They're never protected.
Yes, your counsel. What year was statute amended to exclude from the concept of employment or employee voluntary recreational activity?
I believe it was in 1991 when Senate Bill 218 was passed.
Jeff. Okay, and you've told us that the travel status doctrine has existed for how long?
Since at least 1957.
Was there any indication in the statute that the legislature intended this not to apply to a travel status situation? In other words, doesn't the legislature ordinarily act with knowledge of the law, or we presume the legislature acts with knowledge of the law?
Typically, we presume that, Judge. But I think that we have a situation here is, as I've said in my brief and as I've looked for the cases on this, there's only one case that even brings up the possible interaction between these two statutes, and that was an ICAP decision. That's attachment B to the opening brief that reserved the issue. I think it happens so rarely, and it's I don't think it's ever happened before, and so I don't think they had it in mind. And I think if you look at the purpose of the statute, the purpose of the recreational activity statute was to do exactly what I was talking about before, which is if the employer sponsors a team, a softball team, and people voluntarily participate in that, they should be able to do, and the employer should do that, and we shouldn't hold them liable under the Workers' Compensation Act for that. And I think that's reasonable, and that's what the legislature was doing. But this case is not that case.
What is the principal basis on which we could decide, well, the statute simply doesn't apply in this context? There's no statutory text for that, so why can we ignore the statute?
Well, I think, number one, you're not ignoring the statute. The fit here, the correct doctrine that fits here, is travel status, 24/7 protection absent substantial deviation. Respondents bear the burden, once travel status has been established, to establish the fall off the mark, the substantial deviation. And that's clear under the case law. So what you have to do is apply the doctrine that most fits the situation we're dealing with. And in that context, again, I think what the ALJ did in this case is conflate voluntary participation with substantial deviation. And I think that that's just, as a matter of logic, that is not correct. If you look at civil engineering, probably the case that's closest on point to the facts of this case. The employee in that case is down in Mexico. He, on his own time, with a couple of the co-employees, goes swimming in the Gulf of Mexico, drowns, and dies. The Supreme Court makes it clear in that case that that's a personal choice. He made a personal choice to go do that, and therefore he's not covered by the 24/7 protection that he would otherwise be entitled to. And I would submit the same thing would be true here if Mr. McLaughlin, instead of doing what he did, if he had decided to go on a snowmobile outing with a couple of co-employees, or decided to go float the North Platte, although not this time of year, the time that this happened, float the North Platte and drown with a couple of co-employees. Again, civil engineering would apply, and he wouldn't be protected. But that's not what happened here. We have facts in the record that are absolutely undisputed and unaddressed by the ALJ that indicate that Mr. McLaughlin is not a sports guy. This is not something he would choose to go do on his own. And so even though the judge found voluntary participation, he did not find that Mr. McLaughlin as would make a personal choice to go play in the street hockey game. And again,
is that what voluntary means, is making a personal choice?
In a sense it does, but it doesn't fit with what the standard is for substantial deviation under the travel status cases. But it would be some evidence, I guess, of a voluntary, it would be some evidence of a voluntary choice, but it's not a it's not an indication that this was his, this is what he would choose to do personally on his own time, but for the fact that this was sponsored by the employer. So, again, some evidence of it, but it is not the same thing. It is not the same thing. And at this point, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Doug Koterik. I represent Center for Spinal Disorders and the Hartford Insurance in this matter. My registration number is 21716. This case is a case about travel status and the activity that occurs during that travel status state. Opposing counsel seems to be making the argument that if an employee is on travel status, that anything that occurs during that travel status is deemed within the course and scope of employment.
However, he doesn't quite go that far, counsel.
He does make the exception of the substantial deviation.
He does do that.
And he does do that. However, I do want to point out that in the Silver Engineering Works versus Simmons case, the Supreme Court did state that an employee on travel status, it does not mean that the employee cannot step aside from his employment for personal reasons or reasons in no way connected with his employment, just as he might as an ordinary employee working on a schedule of hours at a fixed location. Travel status, in essence, bestows on an employee the state of working in the course and scope, just as a person working in a fixed location during the scheduled hours. And the exceptions or the activities which would take an employee out of the course and scope if that employee were at the fixed location, those same exceptions apply to somebody that is in travel status to a certain extent, meaning the personal deviation and, as per the statute, the recreational activity.
Would you argue that the statute makes this type of activity by law a substantial deviation or a qualifying deviation from the travel status?
Absolutely. The legislature was clear in its intent to make a voluntary recreational activity, which the appellant has conceded he was in this context, and has excluded that activity from the definition of employment per 840.201(8). And the statute also specifically excludes recreational activity or one who engages in recreational activity from the definition of employee. So the legislature was clear. They said a voluntary recreational activity is excluded from the definition of employment, and one who engages in that voluntary recreational activity is excluded as defined in, as an employee is defined. Therefore, since the travel status doctrine has existed since at least 1957, and since the statute was amended in 1991, and there is no qualification in the statute that says recreational activities exclude an employee from the course and scope of employment, except in travel status cases. There is no indication of that at all. That exception, those statutes apply to someone on travel status as it would apply to someone at a fixed location during a scheduled hours of work. Nonetheless, the ALJ in this case continued to find that per the evidence presented at hearing, the voluntary recreational activity also constituted a substantial deviation, which then removed the claimant from the course and scope of employment. So they really found it on both sides, that it was a violation of the statute and that it constituted a substantial personal deviation. Opposing counsel stated that there was no evidence to show that Mr. McLaughlin did this for his own personal gain, citing that he had never played this sports before or had not done this activity. Yet it's important to note that the ALJ found that Mr. McLaughlin was incredible in his testimony. And it was also important to note that the ALJ found that the testimony of Mr. McLaughlin was in contrast to the substantial testimony of the numerous witnesses for Center for Spinal Disorders, that this was a voluntary activity, that Mr. McLaughlin was not forced or compelled to participate in it, that it had no relation to his job as the financial administrator for the Center for Spinal Disorders.
The ALJ found it had no relation to his job?
That the ALJ, the evidence at hearing demonstrated that. The ALJ found that this was an activity, a voluntary activity, that was so substantial a deviation that it removed the claimant from the course and scope of employment.
I understand that. I was questioning the issue about whether the ALJ found it had no relation to the employment.
The ALJ did not make that finding.
Okay, thank you, counsel.
But the evidence at hearing was that, or the ALJ did find that Mr. McLaughlin was not a credible witness. And so his statements as to whether or not this was something that was for his personal benefit or not, the ALJ did not find.
Well, he found he was not a credible witness, but he didn't find him he was incredible on everything, because he did take the view that Mr. McLaughlin was on travel status, that he did have a business reason for being there.
That's true, Your Honor. The ALJ did find that Mr. McLaughlin was on travel status, and therefore the next application applies, meaning that you look at the exceptions to that travel status, which is our contention that there is a statutory exception to travel status and a case law personal deviation exception to travel status.
I think those are two exceptions to travel status, or they could be consistent with one another?
I believe they can be consistent with one another. I believe the legislature intended to specifically put in the statute that a voluntary recreational activity was exempted from the definition of employment, and that a person engaged in a voluntary recreational activity could not be considered an employee. So the legislature was specific with regard to a voluntary recreational activity, that was not...
Substantial deviation required.
I believe that in this case, the judge found both, that it was a violation of the statute and it was a substantial deviation.
But those can be either or.
Correct. In this case, they were one and the same, I believe.
I was going to say those could be different, but also in law, one could satisfy the other.
I believe that's true. I believe that a voluntary recreational activity could be deemed a substantial deviation, thus excluding it from the realm of course and scope of employment.
Thank you.
Substantial, I would like to focus on the substantial deviation reasoning that this is excluded. Substantial deviation can mean a myriad of things, not only a voluntary recreational activity, but it can mean horseplay, a personal errand, it can mean anything that is not part of the requirements of the job that is done for the benefit of the claimant.
Does it have to be solely for the benefit of the claimant?
The language, there are conflicting areas. Different cases say different things. For example, in Phillips, which a panel of this court found, the standard that was expressed there stated, the issue is whether the activity giving rise to the injury constituted a deviation from employment so substantial as to remove it from the employment relationship. However, in Cater, the court did use the language sole benefit to the claimant. It's our contention that it is the purview of the ALJ as the fact finder to determine whether or not there is a deviation so substantial as to remove it from the employment relationship, which the ALJ did find and make a specific finding in this case. We also contend that the fact that the ALJ found the claimant incredible and said that the witnesses for the Center for Spinal Disorders demonstrated that this was a voluntary recreational activity, that finding that there was a deviation so substantial to remove it from the employment relationship encompasses that it was only for the benefit of Mr. McLaughlin in this case. And therefore, it is our belief that the finding that this was a recreational activity, that it was a substantial deviation, these are findings of fact that the ALJ has substantial evidence supporting that finding and therefore should not be disturbed on appeal. And we request that this court affirm the Industrial Claim Appeals Office decision, affirming the ALJ finding that this injury did not occur within the course and scope of Mr. McLaughlin's employment. I have some time left for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Counsel argued that there had to be a showing of that something was, or made an argument that indicated that something would be in no way connected to his employment to fall within the purview of the exception to the travel status cases. And again, I agree with that. They would have to show something in no way connected to his employment and make the point that voluntary participation in an employee-sponsored recreational activity does not equate with the finding that he was in no way connected to his employment. The exceptions that we find in the case law for a deviation from the broad protection of travel status or intoxication, horseplay, personal recreation, those types of things are what we see in the cases that discuss this doctrine. Now, for purposes of appeal, the voluntary issue has been conceded. It was hotly disputed below, but it was conceded for purposes of this appeal because I don't think that the judge was within his rights, within substantial evidence, in finding that. But it was hotly disputed below. That finding, though, again, does not equate to a substantial deviation under the travel status cases. It just doesn't, as a matter of logic. On the credibility issues that counsel raised about Mr. McLaughlin, the ALJ doesn't address the facts in the record that I'm discussing, and those are the facts that would indicate that Mr. McLaughlin was not a sports guy, would not choose to play this game, has never played this game anywhere.
ALJ have to address specific pieces of evidence, counsel?
Not all pieces. In this context, when you're making a decision under the travel status exception, you have to decide whether or not the claimant engaged in conduct that was
so substantial a deviation or solely for the personal benefit of the claimant. And that evidence was certainly relevant on that issue. And all my argument was, and I think on the record as before you, it's a legal question. There are facts out there. You can make your determination based on the facts as found by the ALJ do not constitute a substantial deviation. You don't need to, he doesn't need to address it, but the ALJ never did address it. Now, if he would have addressed him and said that I find that this is something he would have personally chosen to do, maybe I'd be in a different position, although I don't think there's any evidence in the record to support that fact. I mean, if it was about me and basketball, I would disagree. I would say, yeah, I'd go play basketball. It would be my personal choice, but not Mr. McLaughlin's in this situation. The final thing I would disagree with in counsel's argument is he's arguing that in the travel status contest, you can escape that by showing that it's not part of the requirements of the job. That's simply not the standard when you're under the 24/7 protection, because those cases talk about it's not a requirement of your job that you minister to your personal needs, eat, sleep, and minister your personal needs, but those are clearly protected when you're under the 24/7 protection of travel status. So in closing, this court is in a position to reach this issue as a matter of law and reverse ICAP's affirmance of the ALJ in this situation. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted and a decision will be forthcoming in due course.